The Team Never Quit podcast is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union, and thanks to their flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal's savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. You can check all of this out at NavyFederal.org.
Where is there a war I can get in? Where can I stand up for somebody and fight, but for a reason, for a purpose?
Never quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our very special and awesome guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question of the week. And this week, I like this one a lot. So out of all the Will Ferrell characters out there, all the movies he has, what is your favorite character of him? And I'll kick it off because I absolutely love in The Other Guys whenever he's Gator. Whenever his alter ego turns into Gator.
That's one of my favorite movies, though.
Oh, dude.
I'd have... Do you know him, Will Ferrell?
I've never met him.
I haven't either. I want to, but I haven't met him yet. What you watch his movies?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been around a lot of other characters from Saturday Night Live, but only because they came to visit whatever celebrity I was taking care of at the time. So I'm just a fly in the wall there. So
what's your favorite movie he does?
You know, he does great work, and there's so many to pick from, but I'm going to have to go with the easy one. Santa!
Yeah, I was going to go with that too. I mean, that's the first one that pops in my head is Elf.
Elf.
Every time. I mean, that's a timeless. Every Christmas we have that on.
Who?
Maybe at least 50 or 60 times.
I'll watch Old School, The Other Guys. I'll go through the whole Will Ferrell gambit. If it's on, I'll check it out. But it's mandatory that Elf rolls on during Christmas.
I think that, and the only other time it pops in that I made...
That Daddy's Home.
he comes down, and there was one where he wasn't the main character. He comes down in the end because he was the guy everybody looked up to getting all the chicks. That it?
Wedding Crashers.
He goes to the... Yeah, oh, he goes to the...
Phenomenal role.
That was it.
That Chaz is the other one. My meatloaf! You know how many times I yell that? Oh.
The nunchucks are around his neck.
He's a star. Like, that's, if you want to know, there's a few of them out there that when you say that, his name, man, everyone lights up. What do you think?
I think Daddy's Home. I think the difference between him and Mark Wahlberg, their characters in Daddy's Home, is so funny, and how he just wants to be a dad so bad, and he just tries so hard. Yeah. And
God, he can play that role great.
And he comes across as this super nerdy guy.
Douche. Yeah, man.
And he just wants to be accepted. I think that's so funny.
Those two persons, him and Mark's personalities in real life are...
They do great chemistry. Movies together.
I just saw that for the first time recently, but... I don't know if there was a sequel to that, but
there is.
Uh-huh. Wahlberg's father was in this one.
Yes.
Who played that character?
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's when Sully rolled down the escalator.
Okay. Yes.
At the end.
Yes.
That was great.
Those are Christmas movies mandatory as well.
Daddy's Home and Daddy's Home 2 are two of my favorite, but so is Wedding Crashers. I love that movie. And I love Elf.
Was it Chaz?
Chaz.
Yeah, that was one. He's right.
Freaking Chaz, man.
He's got so many.
Yeah, that is a really good question.
I feel like he picks, like, that he knows that guy. I feel like Chaz might have been a real person that they knew, and he just kind of, I mean, at least he played it like that.
Now, he did do that movie, oh my gosh, Hunter, what's the name of it, when he was in Norway?
Eurovision.
Eurovision.
I love that one, too. So funny. So,
dude, Blades of Glory.
The Eurovision, the first time I watched it, I was like, what the F am I watching?
The Step Brothers.
Step Brothers is my all-time favorite movie.
But after I watched Eurovision a second time, I actually laughed at it.
Yeah, it gets funnier the more.
I mean, plus, the songs are actually pretty catchy.
I've got to go outside the question, too, and just address, you know, the work he did on Saturday Night Live, but one skit was when they were doing, Christopher Walker
shit,
was
more on. Cowbell.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro. More freaking cowbell is a go-to if I need to laugh.
He's the best.
He can hit your funny bone.
Yeah. Yeah, that midsection shirt, his belly was sticking
outside of that freaking sweater. And he goes to wrap it on that thing. Yeah. That's the funniest.
If he needs more cowbell, I think we should just give it to
him.
Dude,
if you got a fever, we got the prescription, man. It's more freaking cowbell. That's a good question.
Oh.
All right. Way to go. Thank you again for doing this. Man, I'm looking forward to this because especially our listeners, they love hearing from team guys, especially ones that came down before I did. It's just the overall where you come from and how'd you get into this whole life. And the way we normally do that is we start from the beginning. Like, where were you born? I don't even know this.
Let me just tell you, Marcus and Melanie, it's an honor. And thank you for even thinking of me. You know, it's just great to be sitting here where it all happens. This is where the magic happens, yeah, how about man.
That's what it looks like.
And you came all the way to Texas for it.
God bless you. Oh, man. This is it. So it's an honor to be here. And all right. I don't really know why I'm here again, but I'll take it because love you guys.
Thank you.
Well, I was born in upstate New York. I think the main significance of that is my father was a Korean War Marine.
Oh, okay, wow.
And he was born and bred in Queens, New York. And I was raised, well, you can imagine, you know, what I see that picture up there on the wall of one of my favorite actors, Robert Duvall. And I believe he did a movie called The Great Santini.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Marines are unique people. And the system is unique, and
Marines are different people altogether.
It's a tough world.
How about that?
You know, I agree, and that's the thing. My dad was one of those guys, so that's how we were raised.
When they get out, they stay the same. They carve them and mold themselves into more of a Marine. It's amazing to watch.
I agree.
I got nothing but bad things to say about good Marines, right? Those guys and gals, they do their freaking job.
People used to ask me afterwards, who do you like to work with best? Because we work with everybody in the world pretty much at one point or another. And I'd have to say, if it wasn't a frogman, it would be a Marine. Because one thing's for sure, their heart is big.
Man, they can work.
And it never runs away.
Mm. And they do to them and putting it when they come back through training, you can see it. Like they physically look different in the face. Like their eyes are different.
Absolutely. And then there's been evolutions, you know, they get in trouble and they have to back off on certain things. But a Korean Marine, I mean, they can still beat the, you know what?
Well, that's what molds them is the battles they've been in. They throw some freaking lead and blood and spit everywhere around.
Those stories, I keep some of those battles on my calendar. We should make a battle calendar for people because the dates.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Of the Alamo, the dates of the Chosun Reservoir. There's so many battles that I try and put in my calendar to remember. Can't share them with anyone because no one else would appreciate them like we do. But those dates and Chosun, you know, that was, well, it goes beyond words sometimes.
Well,
what
we try
everyone
and do it
through.
With the movies, too, on Veterans Day, but there's so many good ones now.
Oh, for sure.
That by the time Veterans Day is over with, you haven't even seen a whole branch of service.
Yep.
Well, now you can start at 9/11 and go all the way to Veterans Day.
Yeah, now we've got so many days on the books where we've been in something that it's almost filled up the calendar.
Good point.
So you got any brothers, sisters?
I have one brother.
Older?
He is. He is. And we're not very close. Not like the blessed relationship you have there. But I will tell you this. I'm very proud of his service. I'm very proud of him as an operator. And he retired out of the teams and ended up doing some good work in the private world as well. But he came to the special team long after I left, and he'll forget that he said this, but it was one of the things that happened because I kind of...
You went through before he did?
No, he was always very military-minded. I wasn't. He actually went to the Citadel.
Oh, nice.
Charleston, and he left in his junior year because he just didn't want to wait anymore. But he did all the research. When we were younger, we had a handyman that worked for our neighbor. He was a Vietnam UDT frog.
Straight up, was a real one?
Yep, real deal. And you know, the kind of guy you'd imagine. He was a good-looking blonde guy, wore shorts and a shirt, worked like a son of a gun.
Tanned all the time, always, yeah, good-looking. Them guys.
He was by himself, you know what I mean? He this is a guy who isn't going to work for anybody else. It's not going to work out that way.
Yeah.
See, he was his handyman. His truck had all his tools, but it was my brother's opportunity to talk to him. And then when he was at the Citadel, he did research. I mean, there's some listeners probably won't be happy about this, but the research was, what is America's most capable, unique, toughest special warfare unit?
That's how they sold it. Mm-hmm. That's in the advertisement. That's not something we made up.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
The reason we say that is because that's how it's advertised when we sign up. That's what draws us to that. And then, yeah, we fall into that and become that, but especially with them guys.
And there's reasons for it.
Sure.
We can get into, but so that's what happened. And now I actually played lacrosse, and I had a partial scholarship. I'd broken my shoulder wrestling in my junior year, so I'd wrestled for a long time, 6 years up to that point. But I'm talking to him. He's in Buds. He was in class 106. I ended up being class 110.
Come on.
And I'm talking to him, and everything he's telling me is, like, really cool.
It is.
It was really cool.
106. Wait, what year is that?
1979.
Oh, that's the year I was born.
Man, okay, so he's old school.
Yeah, but now here's the surprise that you didn't ask about. So as a kid... I don't even know how to explain it, so I'll just make the short part of it. I was only really good at climbing, and I was always climbing buildings. Well, I was good at a lot of stuff, but let's go jump to high school. I didn't mean that a lot of stuff. Let's just say if it wasn't wrestling season, wrestling wasn't very popular at our school. I had to wrestle because it was my lacrosse coach was a wrestling coach. And I'm so glad I did because it was the greatest sport I ever played. But beyond that, I guess you'd call me a hood. But I was the kid that everyone in high school came to if they needed something in school. They left their homework there. They left their jacket there. Seniors wanted their jerseys or something because I could get in that school any day I wanted, anytime, anywhere. And I ended up being the one that stole the other team's mascot, this 15-foot-tall Viking. And that carried on, believe it or not, into the Navy, into the few real missions that I had. And, there was a reason I told you that where we left off, but that was my thing. And I could get in anywhere and get anything.
So it was your brother. How did he initially find out about the SEAL program? Back because it wasn't big.
From the neighbor.
Just that guy?
He specifically, like I say, he was always very oriented towards the military, and he specifically did research and went to school to look it up. And then, of course, when he was at the Citadel, he continued on.
Okay.
And so when I talked to him.
Because even when you would get into recruiting, they wouldn't talk about it.
Well, that was the thing. He knew it. And he knew it back of the hand. And that's why when I was talking to him, it was so cool. But that's where I got off track. I have Paul Newman's race jacket. He used to race at Watkins Glen. And one of my teachers was a shop teacher. I didn't take the jacket. I just someone and I came across it. But on this particular day, there was this big program. I'm from a place called Corning, New York, and it's very famous for Corning glass. Mm-hmm. And Corning glass is responsible for a lot of war stuff, but everything from fiber optics, you name it. And it's an amazing company. And during the summer, they had this summer theater. It was a really big production, and actors would come. And I forget who the actor was. I think it was somebody I ran into later on down in my life. A famous singer. I can't remember if it was Engelbert Humperdinck or whoever it was. But anyway, I went to the show, and they had these great costumes. Big velour robes. It was a King Arthur kind of thing. And believe it or not, I was able to get in. The glass center has priceless artifacts and quite a security system and everything. And I just wanted one of those robes.
Oh, my gosh.
Remember, I'd always get everything. I had the master key to both my school and the rival school. And so I got that robe, and I got a few other things. And I thought King Arthur's crown is cool. And the only reason I'm telling you this is I ditched everything in the attic of our house, and my mom and dad found King Arthur's crown and right away knew where it came from, and they were scared to death because their whole life, both my parents retired from Corning Glass, and they're thinking, oh my God, somebody's going to find out that our son stole all this, we're going to lose our pension, and they were able to get rid of it. And so right then and there was a day, it was a bad day for me, and it was like, you know what? I'm not going to go to college. I'm just going to college to play lacrosse. I'm not going to college because I want to go to college. I'm going to do what my brother's going to do. And that's how it happened.
You ended up in the military.
But once I was in, you know, the Navy, even boot camp, everything.
Was he an officer?
No.
You said he left early, so I didn't.
No, I did. He did. He stayed in.
Yeah, through the Citadel? He went through the Citadel, all the way through the Citadel?
Oh, well, he left the Citadel early.
Yeah, junior there year, you right? Yeah. Okay, check.
He left the Citadel.
And then y'all both enlisted in the Navy.
Right.
And then both went to Buds.
He got his degree later, but through the Navy, and right. he never went to OCS or anything.
So when it was in Coronado when y'all checked in?
Yes.
Let's talk about that for a little bit, because have you been to the compound lately?
No, but I've heard there's. Yeah, I wouldn't know it.
I didn't even recognize it. It's unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
More it's crazy. Changes.
It is unbelievable. It's
not
amazing.
Even at the same spot.
It's what you think a SEAL team should look like. It is. I mean, when you walk in, I remember it had to when you came in there, and then the reputation you guys made, y'all built what we lived in. And you see that sucker now, and it's something.
It's state of the art. Very, very nice.
It's like Men in Black.
I love
that's kind of what it looks like.
I love the sound of it, but there was still something that was romantic to me about the way it used to be, where you could actually go on the Strand and people walked by the Bud's 3-story building, and it was a hell of a time. I mean, the people in the Coronado K's there, we were their entertainment.
Yeah,
these very wealthy
the
people.
The Dell too,
and the Dell, sure, the Dell. Sure,
still entertainment for them.
Well, that's good.
During Hell Week, the Rock Portage, when they come in and beat the crap out of us there, they love watching that.
I remember one day, I'm not going to tell you this story, but I remember one day I was running down the beach on my own. It was winter time. Again, people were able to come right past the compound, and I look out in the surf zone, and there's somebody's hand up and down the surf. And I'm looking around. There's no one around. I'm thinking, you know, before you could be pranked. I didn't have the word. Is somebody playing a game on me? And no, there's somebody out there in the surf zone. Well, you know, you're a frogman. Something that I've always carried. Our responsibility is all-inclusive. There's somebody in the surf. I'm going. And, you know, it's winter. It's cold water. I got nothing on.
It's always cold.
So I go. I'm watching this hand. I'm trying to swim. I'm trying to use what I learned. I've got to be careful. I've got to be ready to dive under at the last minute because I can't see them coming up. But their hand's there, so they're still alive. It's not just, you know, a hand on the surface. It's sticking up. So I get closer and I get just ready to dive. It was a sex doll. And the hand was sticking up because the air had gone up to just the hand.
Oh,
just
gosh.
When I go to, I see this face with the red lips.
Does anybody in the teams know this story? Because I can't believe it. We do now.
Oh, my God.
Well, I can't wait to send you something in the mail.
Well, imagine now, though, I got to come out of the surf zone, and I'm looking around. Did anybody see me? I'm trying to cover my head.
Yeah, right.
And I did not save the doll. I left it there. So I hope I didn't, you know, ambush somebody else.
Return it to where you found it. That's a good frog, man, right? Return it where you found it. Better than you found it.
To this day, did somebody set me up? I don't know.
That's right.
So what was Bud's Class 110 like? How many of y'all started and how many finished?
You know, I probably won't remember numbers exactly, but I think it was, because I've had to answer that before, I think it was around 86 guys started. We graduated 23.
Are you winter class?
Or
half and half?
It had half winter in it. We graduated December 5th. That's one day I always remember for me. That's my anniversary.
What is it, December 5th?
December 5th, yeah.
Oh, so you're half and half.
Yeah. My brother.
Team guys will find any way to be tougher than any other team guy because we have a pure winter class.
Yeah.
There's one class.
I know.
Those son of bitches are hard.
Isn't that you?
I guarantee you the water was colder. And the rocks are probably heavier for those guys, too.
Absolutely. Well, of course they were. They're big. Yes, sir, they were.
Was your brother there
when you were there, or had he already graduated and went out?
He literally graduated a year ahead of me. So
that's what I did with my brother.
Was it?
Yes, sir.
So,
well, technically there was some in between, but I got stuck in the pipeline a long time because I was a medic.
18 Delta.
So they sent me to Bragg for a long, 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 long time, and then when I got back, I caught up with him. Matter of fact, I got my Trident a day before he graduated.
How about that?
It was great. I mean, it was great. So. Did your brother tell you what was going down?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All the time y'all did that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's squared away.
Hell Week, you know, and what do we call that before Hell Week? Breakout.
Breakout.
I knew exactly what was coming. And
that didn't get to you? Breakout kind of freaked me out.
No, I was ready. I was ready. And I'll tell you that, though. Did you incur this? Now, this was probably... In the very beginning, I can't tell you what kind of day, but we're standing for our first inspection, I think. And, of course, I knew how to polish a boot from my brother / and my dad. So I'm squared away. Uniform's immaculate. Boots are like glass. And our proctor, that was what he's called, our class proctor, comes by.
Still same.
Okay. And he's looking at everybody's name, and, you know, just like the movie, Lee Marvin going down the line, you know, giving guys a, where are you from, son? Never heard of it kind of thing. And
and
then he gets in front of me, and he sees my name. Karachi. Don't tell me you had a brother that came through here a year ago. Same, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, then he just, your brother, that fat piece of shit.
Yeah.
And beyond that, then he looks at my belt buckle and, God damn it, I made the fatal error. He's looking, he can't find a thing. And then he takes my belt buckle in front of me and tilts it just a little bit. And he says, Karachi, look down there. What do you see? Of course, a little dribble of Brasso. Yeah. So that was my first day. I had to hit the surf. And I wasn't smart enough like the other guys that go over the berm and then take their boots off because then you got to shine them. I went in with everything.
Okay, so I didn't
like
know that trick either. No one told me that trick either. And that inspection beatdown is the worst.
Now, the thing, though, was in those days, for me, there were only a couple of brother teams in. And one of them was the Bond brothers. And that was very significant because one of my roommates, Billy Robinson, was a great kid. He was an ensign. He lost his life on the Grayback. The Grayback was a huge incident that occurred. For the listeners who don't know, it was an old diesel sub made for SEAL Team, had two chambers on it, and one of the Bond brothers was one of my instructors. Well, they were together. One brother was in one chamber, one was in the other, and the one chamber is where guys died, and Billy was killed, and one of the Bond brothers, and he had to be there to try and resuscitate his brother. That's one thing about the teams that the rest of the military doesn't do. We honor brothers, and we'll let brothers serve together because we know what brothers will do for each other.
Mm-hmm. When I got to roll out with Morgan, we just couldn't ride in the same Humvee together, or Hilo. Other than that, it was game on. We lived right beside each other in the tent. Even when he became an officer, you know, that kind of, he's an older brother, and he's always treated me like shit.
Older by 7 minutes.
He fit right into that officer.
Oh, I get it.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, that 7 minutes makes a huge difference.
Huge. Yeah. He'll tell you it does.
Oh, well, I'm sure.
Daily.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'll give him his money later, but yeah, he told me, you know.
I can't take anything.
He gave me all the crap on you.
All the instructions, I mean, like, I was a witness to this. I saw him get his ass beaten buds, and they still gave him Honor Man out of that.
Wow.
I know, right? What up?
Oh, yeah.
Overachieving.
You suck. If your brother was Honor Man, what were you? Dishonor Man?
I don't know. No, I didn't even get fire in the gut, man. I'm the anchor man. Like, hey, Latrell, good job, bro. I could just take a beating. Whatever that dude is. The goon. I was in the goons. I was with the goons, man. You got to have them.
Oh, okay, my gosh.
Was first phase and second phase the same, or was it reversed when you went through? Was dive phase first?
No. First phase was just, you know, the PT, mental hell week.
Tell me the story about the guy on the pull-up bar.
Oh, okay. So that's second
this
phase.
This sets Tim Got Tone right here.
This is second phase. And, you know, first phase is done, hell week's done. And one of the things I'm kind of proud of is, once again, you know, I am being a rebel. Because if you see a picture of our hell week graduation, I'm the only guy without a hat on. And you got to have your cover on. It's just, I don't know. I didn't do it on purpose. It's just kind of thing.
Because that was right after Hell Week.
Right after Hell Week.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know. So now
screw
it's
your ass away, huh?
Second phase is starting.
Oh, yeah.
And for those who don't know, the old Buds compound, and there was a 3-story apartment building, and first phase lives on the first floor, second phase on the second floor, third phase on the top floor. And Hell Week is done right there. They stop doing that and they move you to offside.
Yeah.
So we're in our room for Hell Week and they come right in with the flashbangs, the machine guns, and trash your room and all that. Anyway, second phase, we had one of the instructors in second phase was just a huge guy, tall like Marcus, but he was just beyond being human. And second phase starts, and we're going out to the grinder for our first PT, and here is this guy, Lieutenant Pearson. He's wearing our tanks in those days, which were twin steel 72 cubic inch scuba tanks.
Scuba tanks, yeah.
Dual, and these things are heavy, to say the least, out of water. Well, Mr. Pearson is doing pull-ups with these scuba tanks. And he'd walk across the grinder, do 10 pull-ups, and we're looking at this guy and thinking, holy crap. Because the first thing you think about
That's awesome, by the way. That's intimidating.
Well, I got to tell you, that's the thing. I'm thinking, Jesus, I might not make it. It's the first time I'd say, geez, can I make it?
That's exactly what you think. Like, hey, man, I don't know if I can get to that.
I don't think
I can. I didn't even think you could do that.
That's like doing pull-ups with two people tied to your back.
Yeah, two people on his back over here doing pull-ups.
And he's doing them slow, you know, more muscle tissue use. Slowly pull them up. I'm thinking, Jesus, this is amazing. Well, remember, I was the guy that climbed in, sneaked in. Well, that didn't stop at Buds either, because guys wanted extra blue and golds, or they wanted an extra K-bar. So I got into the supply room, and I'm rummaging around locked areas where students, you know, are not supposed
to
be.
To go, yeah.
And I'm in the second phase area now where the instructors are, and I just happened to, a door was open. I just happened to close the door and look behind it. And what do I see behind that door? I see these twin 72 cubic inch scuba tanks. And I thought, man, those look like the ones Mr. Pearson uses. And I grabbed them and they were styrofoam.
What?
Hollywood made them. And they look just like the real thing. And there's Mr. Pearson.
Hey, what a mind.
Killing us. And they were styrofoam. It was a riot.
They do that crap to us all the time, and you don't know it.
And that
what
really,
a great sense of humor, too, though.
That was the beauty. And one of the most unique things about the teams that I will never forget is there's always a degree of humor, no matter how bad it is.
No matter how bad.
We if you can't do that, you almost cannot be a frogman. And that degree of humor has saved a lot of lives.
Let me tell you something, because look at the duality of that. Like, because when we were sitting there looking at it, like, that's so, he did that on purpose to intimidate the ones to get out of there. But think about how hard it is to keep a straight face when you're doing that.
Oh, man, and you are
it's
so
like that guy
right
who,
about that.
Drinks the sweet tea in the Jack Daniels bottle.
So
just
right about that.
Just calm that sucker down, and you're like, what the, how'd that happen?
And he did. What a great sense of humor.
He did. He straight faced the whole way through. But that humor thing, I got to tell you. So in our Bud's breakout, my class leader, he we haven't talked in years. So not that we don't. It's just that, you know, I was a pain in the ass in Bud's. So people grow up. They don't remember that you've grown up too. They probably just remember the way I was. But my class leader.
I think that might be a real thing. Because I run, absolutely, I think that might be a real thing. Like, hey, man, I remember you from Bud's. I'm like, okay, so I had to grow up just a little bit, all right? So don't, please, please. And, you know, when we get out of SEAL teams, man, God shuts that book on us. go ahead.
Well, no, so we're in breakout, you know, and, you know, for those who don't know, breakout is when Hell Week starts, and you're not supposed to know about it, but I kind of had a clue, and... you're not told it's going to happen between midnight and whenever. And next thing you know, you're trying to sleep, but Hell Week starts. And all of a sudden you hear explosions and machine gun fire. And for us, they came right into your room.
Yeah,
and you hear the head of the trainers was Senior Chief Nepper, a wonderful Vietnam veteran again. And they're giving you instructions. Of course, you can't hear the instructions. They make sure you can't. And then if you think you can hear them, they give you silly instructions. So you're bound to fail no matter how.
Yeah, they're like, hey, go right, and they'll point with their left hand. Exactly. Like that, dude.
Like a magician.
Like a magician. Yep. And then you see guys that you hadn't seen before, which is terrifying.
Yep.
Because they're pissed.
Yep. That is correct. And you're like, anything you knew, like even I did, I'm double guessing it now. Well, maybe I was wrong, and maybe we fucked up here. And so I just remember us being in one of those times when you're kind of in the PT thing, and they're walking around, the whole garden hose is in your face, you're already cold, you're soaking wet. Flashbangs are going off right around you. Sometimes on you, the brass casings from the M60s are going down your neck and burning you. And I'm right next to our class leader, and we're just laughing. We're laughing. And an instructor will come down there, and he'll yell at you. But I remember one time in particular, they have the travel bell.
Oh, yeah.
The bell that can be moved around. And put that bell right in front of you. Hey, Karachi, why are you doing this? This is so stupid. Just ring the bell, be warm, get something to eat. And he did it between me and my class leader. Let's just say his name is Neil. And I looked at him because, you know, these guys are 4 years older than me. I went to college. They taught me a lot. I never swam in cold water before. And they taught me a lot of stuff. And we just looked at each other and laughed. And the instructors, they'd take the bell right away from us, and you could see them smirk.
Yeah.
But their smirk was, we want those guys to pass. So that's what we wanted, but we're not going to tell them we're happy about it. And you know,
brilliant at that.
What was important about that was years later, I left the team 30 days before this happened, and that the only thing I would have changed in my life. But that was the first mission that the special team had, and it didn't go well for a lot of guys. God bless them. So they jump into Grenada. My class leader, my friend, remember, we were right together during that Hell Week. What happens is, I'm not there, so I can't tell you for sure, but the guys all told me, the sea levels were beyond comprehension. And I think
I've always heard that.
If you talk to any good frogman, it's hard for us to imagine drowning. But we all come close at some time or another.
Or I've done it, actually.
Mm-hmm. And I have too. I was knocked unconscious.
I think every frogman's drowned at least once or twice.
I believe that's true.
It's time to elevate your confidence from the boardroom to the bedroom with Hims. Whether you're making your power moves in the office, enjoying a fine dinner at night, or you're hitting the gym hard, Hims ensures that you are always at your best. Hims is your ultimate game changer, providing affordable and discreet access to essential treatments. You can forget about the hassle of awkward doctor's visits, because with Hims, it's all about easy online solutions to a pretty common issue. Ready to maintain that confidence day and night? Begin your free online visit today at hims.com/TNQ. Explore personalized treatment options at hims.com/TNQ now. And remember, prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider. Restrictions apply. Go visit the website for details and safety information. Subscription is required, and prices may vary based on product and plan. Remember, it is HIMS.com/TNQ.
Because when they say that scary cease, that really doesn't mean anything to us. Like, I think we're going. We got to go anyways. You don't.
I often think about it today because I think if I ever come up with something like dementia, I hope I'm brave enough to identify it and go for a long swim. That's where I want to be.
Yep. Go fishing, man.
Yep.
I know a lot of guys that talk about that, that long fishing trip. I get that.
I don't know why, but I've often said that to people. Is it the frogman or the guy that wanted to be a frogman? Because I think we are who we are before that. Otherwise, why would you do it?
Why would you do it?
Yep.
So, I get that question real. You understand that question real well when you get later down the line. Like, why in the hell would you do that?
And there's the thing. That's a problem because it's not my age. It's my mileage, right?
Yeah.
So my friend, my class leader, was on that stick where everyone drowned. Only two guys survived. One that actually hit the rubber duck.
How? That's amazing, right?
I don't know this story. Can you tell us for the listeners exactly what happened?
Well, I only as an outsider and the guys telling me, but the guys jumped and initially they were told, how reminiscent is this of D-Day? They were told that it was going to be low resistance. Everything was a good deal. And then midway, I guess, they were told that no, pack on more gear. So the guys wanted more ammo, and in battle, you know, you learn one thing. All the other stuff isn't important. Water, especially for desert guys, and ammunition. That's what you need. Anyway, the guys loaded up heavy. And when they jumped, the sea conditions were beyond comprehension. And for people that don't understand what that means is, and for me, I spent a lot of time in South Florida, and you see the seas from a hurricane. So you've got swells that are beyond what you can measure. So let's say they could be anywhere from 10 feet to 50 feet. That's crests and troughs. But beyond that, you have wind, and wind is frothing up the water. So now, okay, you can float, sure, but you can't breathe. Even though you're on the surface, you can't breathe. Wherever you turn your head, you're going to get froth.
And get slapped.
So here you are now. It's dark. They did everything right. You know, there's a lot. We have SOPs that we live by. We never drop our fins until you hit the water. Guys should, and they used to do that, and they misjudged the water, and they cut away too soon, and now, you know, it's a 100-foot fall. That's like hitting concrete. They did everything right. So Neil does everything right. He's in the water, and now what happens is they were jumping squares, though. They weren't jumping round. Six had the squares then. Really, in those days, they were...
I'm talking about the parachute design.
They were so cool. We had technology that today you guys look at and say, really, you think that's cool? They had little cards that were lights. They weren't even LEDs. I don't know how they did it. But anyway, when you hit the water, you only got a matter of minutes. And if that parachute gets saturated, well, it's an anchor. You're going down. Mm-hmm. End of story. When we all taught... You know, when you hit the water, if you've got your chute, reach back as far as you can, grab a handful, pull it in front of you. And if you just keep doing that, you'll get the chute over your head and you'll be free. Well, he cut away the chute, so that should have been great, but the wind blew it right on his head anyway. So now he's reaching back and he pulls fabric over, but the wind and the water keeps blowing it back on him. It's not working. Chute saturated. He's gone. He's underwater now. That shoots all over him. And he told me. He said, I conceded the death. Because I couldn't get it. I'm sinking. And it shoots over me. And he said, at that point, I didn't make it. And then as he's sinking, he was thinking about Hell Week. And he was thinking about that day that they rang the bell in front of him. And told me, I realized that that's what it was all about. Not quitting. You know, team never quit. If you never quit, you'll never know how to. And it was at that moment that he said, no, like someone else I know sitting across from me that had to say to himself, I am not going to let it take me. I am going to fight. So he started the same procedure, moving the fabric over his head. But this time, he's underwater. So the conditions weren't affecting him the same way. He got the fabric over his head, and he made it to the surface. And he is the only one that survived outside of the kid that hit the rubber duck. And he's always been an example to me. I'm sure I annoyed a lot of people when I left Six. You know, when you become a frogman, that's a career move. Yeah. And I was supposed to do that. And I'm sure that's why, you know, a lot of those bonds, you know, but most guys, especially if you hit the special team in those days, you stay in. But anyway, the story was about that. Can you imagine?
That one
incident in Buzz, specifically in Hell Week, that saved his life.
Wow.
I'm not.
The only reason I knew I could make it is because I had made it through Hell Week. Like, I kept telling myself that. Like, I've been here. But it was, it was just different. It was different. And I thought Hell Week sucked worse. You know, team guys get into everything. Right? That's the best part about bringing y'all on and hearing the stories about it is like each guy has this freaking thing that happens to them.
Perspective. Yeah.
So when they move us around like they do, when you patch up with somebody, it was like most of us hear the stories too. Like, dude, you hear what that guy had to go through?
Is he still alive?
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, I'm probably shouldn't say he'd be embarrassed, but years ago, my other good friend that was second to the class leader, he's a character in himself. He left the Navy and he got a job with a three-letter agency and he decided to leave. And I said, you know, why did you leave? And he said, they were all pinheads.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, he was in DEA Quantico, and then he decided to pull the plug and he ended up going back in the Navy. He retired with a full bird. They wanted him to have a star,
oh, man.
But he said,
"Those freaking guys."
He said, I'm done.
You only hear about they're like, I did 20-something years, retired as a captain or admiral. But you don't realize that they had two, three other careers in front of that.
That's true. Well, he called me one day.
Some of them, man.
He called me one day and he said, hey, that man Neil is retiring and they want to do a special thing and they wanted some photographs of his Navy days, and I'm pretty sure you have some more than I. And I said, sure. So I sent him in. He, believe it or not, was the CEO of one of the biggest telecom companies in the country.
Good for him. I try and tell people, man, our community is so broad.
The evolution. We just, you know, some people, he was a great guy. I ran into him several times when I still had a badge, and he was working with a company guy in KNR, kidnap and ransom stuff in South America, and he ended up working for a big pastry company, believe it or not, and involved in a director of security. And then next thing I knew, I was talking to his good friend, my other lieutenant, and he's the CEO. Where?
Yeah.
And you sit back and you got to be proud. I'm so proud. And, you know, he had a couple of great kids because we need that today, yeah. You know. And I saw that a lot in law enforcement, you know, where you just don't have parents that take the responsibility to raise the kids. And I hate to say it, in a large part, it's not the kid's fault. But then again, comes a point in life where.
Oh, eventually it is.
You got to wake up.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
you got to have both. Dad gives you discipline. Your mom gives you manners. Send that sucker out to, you know, hanging out with other kids like that molds all that into place.
Well, you guys need to have more kids.
I wish.
And I say that not because I want to torture them, but because.
I got luck, man. Well, yeah, they got a great mama. I got a great assignment. It was awesome. So when you graduated Buds, were your brother, were you all on the same team or did they switch?
No, you know.
Coast?
In those days, there's a lot, and we were talking earlier today about that, too. There's a lot about Buds that we're never privy to, and there's a reason for that. And I learned later on, like we were talking, I was with I'm with Mr. Marcinko, the founder of Six. And
Richard Marcinko, goes by Dick.
Yep, big skipper.
SEAL Team Six, Red Cell guy, kind of wrote the book Rogue Warrior.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Go ahead.
We're doing a contract that he generated for Eastern Michigan University, and we're sitting in front of a class, and somebody, one of the students asked him a question. And the bottom line was, you know, do you guys do this and do that and buds? And what Dig said is, well, we want the guys to know enough so they can successfully navigate buds. But we don't tell them everything. One, they certainly couldn't absorb everything at that time. But two, if we're very strategic about how we're going to instruct them and what we're going to teach them, but yet it's enough, but it's not enough, then those that succeed and those that even do better demonstrate an internal ability that they already had. And so the science behind it was the reason they don't give us, in my day, more psychological techniques and even maybe some physical, physiological tricks. They want to see who's going to do it on their own. And therefore, that inherent skill, those are the guys that will probably be groomed for it, advancing into other things. A lot of guys will be frogmen, but that's it. They won't be thought of or groomed to do something special. So, for instance, and that's why I brought it up in my buds class, well, there are only two SEAL teams. So you got one SEAL team in San Diego, one SEAL team in Norfolk, Virginia. I apologize to anyone that I have offended there.
All West Coast guys pick on the East Coast dudes. Hey, don't worry. I'm right there with you.
And I know you're an East Coast frog.
No, I'm not. I'm West. Was my brother went over there.
Oh, okay. There it was.
Yeah.
It was
Marcus was augmented with 10. He was SDV when Red Wing went down.
I was special deliveries. So I went to special deliveries first, and then that's when I got assigned to 10. But I'm a Westie.
Got it. Well,
I mean,
so there you go.
Real proud about that West Coast thing.
So let's say.
And I never made it to 6. I only made it to 5. That's what I like telling people.
You've got 23 guys now that are graduating. There's only two SEAL teams. Everybody wants to go to SEAL team. No one wants to go to UDT.
Because they were still around. We were still cut in half.
Yep. And the reason for that is for listeners is in those days, everybody has to go overseas. Everybody has to do their tours, but UDT had to do it on ship.
Oh.
And they have to be on ship. And
that was a game changer back then. Game changer now. When we hear that.
Yeah, well, you know, we're still in the Navy. We're supposed to be sailors.
And that's exactly what they say to us. When they stick our asses on those submarines and on those boats, they're like, bottom line, your ass belongs to the Navy.
When did that change? When did UDT phase out?
I'm trying to remember, but it was...
When was all the astronaut stuff was going down, right? In the 70s? Late 60s?
Well, no, because he was in 79.
I think early 80s they started to decommission and change them. But the point there was, what do you think? Everybody's going to want to pick SEAL Team 1. No one wants to go to Virginia when you can be in San Diego. And so they only picked two guys. Went to one out of my class, and it was the Iron Man, or whatever we call him, class, you know, valedictorian, yeah, if badass. You will, and me. And a couple guys, I think 6 went to 2, and then everybody else got split up into UDT teams.
Really?
Yep. My brother, we were very different physically, too. He's short, squatty. He can't touch a weight, otherwise muscles will just be muscles on top of muscles. When he swam, left a wake in the water.
Roger that. I know what you're saying.
And so he went to UDT, but he went to UDT 11, so we were both on the same coast. We never really operated together, but he ended up doing a tour with the jump team.
Yeah. Oh, he's a leapfrog.
Yeah. Nice. And so I, SEAL Team 1 had just started in school free fall training, so I did my free fall there, and so we got to jump together a little bit, but free fall. Okay. This was something that, I don't know. It demonstrates more about the individual, okay? Like, you know, what was more important, a guy that was a SEAL or a guy that wanted to be a SEAL? I mean, obviously, you've got to accomplish it. But so anyway, you got to look at it this way. Free fall is difficult because there's no gravity. So you're jumping out of an airplane, or in this case, a chopper for our first jumps, and you got to control your legs, but most people don't feel these things. I've been fighting martial arts and stuff as well as wrestling as a little kid forever, so part of that is knowing that your body's made up of multiple weapons. Anyway, the reason I bring that up is they spend a good amount of time on what we call dirt diving and understanding what you're going to do on the ground.
Visualizing and walking through it before we go do it.
Absolutely. Well, talking about what's going to happen in the air, still, you just can't explain it.
Completely different when they take your ass off the earth.
That's right. Now today, you know, people, there was a thing called advanced free fall, which they did later, and now they have all kinds of technology, but it was just that. You get told what to do, and then, boom, you're out of the plane.
That fast.
That's fast.
I remember they had a little roller table that we got to sit on our chests and bellies, and they would kind of spin it around with their hands.
That's very cool.
And they were like, this is kind of what it's like. No, it's not. No, it's not. It wasn't. If you could find the video of my first five jumps out of a free fall, it looked like God reached in the plane and grabbed me by the foot and sidearmed my big ass down to the earth. I mean, my instructors were like, I've never seen anything like this. My brother's a sky god. I mean, he sits around me and he can fly around. I look like the greatest American hero. Remember that show when that dude tried to fly?
I do.
That's what my ass looks like on a parachute.
Well, you're not alone. That happened to a lot of guys.
And I don't know why it's like that. It just is.
Well, so for me, I got in trouble again. And it's funny. Last time I got in trouble was with that same guy I told you about that survived Grenada. And we were at the special team playing. Anyway, the point was, I just listened to my chief. My chief was an air god. He was on Leapfrogs too. A wonderful guy. He half Filipino, half American. Funniest friggin' guy in the world. I was the biggest pain in his ass so many times because a little bit of knowledge for me went a long way. And I remember static.
That's a good way to say that.
Well,
I've never heard it like that. I might steal that. It's funny.
It's true for me. I remember we got in a big argument. We were static line jumping, and I wanted my knife here, and he kept telling me it shouldn't be there. And it was just an example of, I didn't have enough people telling me, hey, kid, you got two ears and one mouth. Keep your fucking mouth shut.
Dude, I got told that all the time, too, and I couldn't.
Well, fortunately.
My chief said he beat that into me. Like, he actually had to whip my ass a couple times, man.
Well, I guarantee you this, though. If you were going to do something that really would have been dangerous to yourself, they would have just said, hey, I'm your chief.
Team guys are, they'd be like, I told you.
Yep.
And I think about those guys, and you know, we have the ones that are loud and boisterous and get rowdy, and then we have the freaking stoic.
Yep.
Like they can just say something to you, man. I mean, SEALs come in all wrapped in everything.
Yep. Well, I remember, you know, for me, I still had all the Vietnam veterans walking around.
Almost, I couldn't even imagine what that was like.
Almost every guy had a story from a UDT guy named Happy Baker that was part of the first one of the SEAL squads that ambushed another SEAL squad.
Oh, shit.
By accident. And the only reason they knew what happened was because the other guys were shooting stoner and no one else had stoner.
No one's had one, yeah.
And then we had another guy, I forget, who definitely didn't clear the static line properly, and the static line ripped his bicep right off. And then I remember Mac McCarthy, who...
Senior chief?
Might have been at that time, but I think he was still younger then.
He's an instructor, talking about.
He got blown up pretty good in Vietnam. But Mac, I'd look at these guys, though, and each guy was a different lesson to remember. And Mac, his head was a little funny. He was missing a part, and they had to rebuild it. One of the grenades he was wearing got shot.
Oh, gosh.
On his belt. He had him forward.
Oh, I've heard that happen. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was part of him. And then you see guys, you know, that have wounds from a 50 caliber. Well, the Soviets had a 51 caliber, whatever, where you can't replace that flesh.
Yeah.
And not all of those were lessons. Some of those were, that's the way it is. You could, no matter how good you're doing, that can happen. I've always found life really boring. And in the teams, it was, I don't know, I guess it was a gift for me, but you're supposed to be scared when you jump out of a plane at first. I got to be honest with you, maybe I'm the crazy guy, because remember they say, you know, you're either scared or you're crazy. I just did everything Chief said. I came out of that chopper. I held my position. Boom, I'm stable. Most people, they come out, and you almost, it's so hard to hold, but your butt's going to come over. The lower center of gravity will fall. I just held it the way he said. I came out stable. I said, okay, that was easy. Now what? And I went into the tracking formation.
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking, this is cool. So I'm holding a max track, which means you're falling at terminal velocity almost at a 45-degree angle. We didn't have flight suits then. Well, the problem was...
Who are you jumping in?
They were like...
UDT, the old ball and boys hanging out and just flapping on the
pilot
way.
Pilot
coveralls.
Yeah.
Oh, check. Roger that. Yeah.
And so I'm tracking across the sky. Well, the problem is Chief, who's our you know, former leapfrog, and his name was Cobber, by the way, so we call him K-Bar. He also had a brother in teams, by the way, younger. Well, K-Bar, he's flying to help all the other guys who are unstable, get them stable and make sure they're going to pull. We did have some mechanism that would pull altitude-oriented, right. But that was it. And he'd make sure, and here I am tracking, and he thought I was out of control because I was tracking. Even though I was holding position, he thought that I was going to just, you know, crash into the earth. But he couldn't get to me because I was, boom, zooming out. Well, he was pissed. And he saved everybody, and we got to the ground. And, of course, that happened quite a few times for some reason whenever I'd land after parachuting. I got yelled at for one thing or another. But he came up and gave me the ninth degree, and I said, Chief, I did what you told me to do, and it was so easy. I wanted to try something else.
I don't know what it was when I would hear about the jump 2 days before, my hands would start sweating. And my goggles always froze up. They always fogged up real bad. And the thing about being the jump is that there's always somebody in there cutting up.
Oh, yeah.
That'll pull your pin out of your shoe and then put it back in. You can't help it. Like, team guys can't help that. I always banked the fact that my Odyssey would blow at 1,500 feet if I just got too far out of control.
That's the mechanism that keeps you from...
Yeah, the reserve. We have a mechanism that if team guys get too far out of whack, that some bitch will blow. And I remember in jump school, my instructor, I could hear him laughing at me when we were falling. And I look over at him as I'm in a flat spin because I tried to arrow out, dude, and I started flat spinning. He was just kind of shaking his head. He's like, you're amazing, man. And I'm trying real hard. Like, in those moments when I get nervous, I try real hard. I think they could tell. Still the funniest thing ever. I mean, how could they not think that was funny?
It's like throwing a cat out of the plane.
Worse, yes, because I make some noise the cat can't.
Well, remember, too, one of the things that Marcus is explaining, and it's very vivid to me, is you're in a military jump, we have to jump as close together as we can. Now, you have static line and you have free fallers, you know, when we jump with squares later, but you still did one thing together. You get up in line and you examine each other's equipment to make sure the guy's squared away and nothing bad's going to happen. And then when you're wearing a square, that included opening the flaps, make sure the pins were connected. And
we trust each other.
And absolutely. And that was the first thing you do. That's where you try to scare the shit out of the guy in front of you first time.
And trust is not always a good thing.
There you go.
Because there's levels that go with team guys, and we got some guys that you can't believe. If they know you, they love you, and you love each other.
They won't let you jump with a...
You don't even know.
If I'm behind Marcus, I'm checking his stuff, and I don't care if it's good or not. I'm shaking his legs.
It's getting in here. That's what it's all about.
That's a little loose, sir, Marcus.
That doesn't look good, man.
And then I'll check his pin. I say, man, that freaking pin looks like it's bent. I'm not even sure if it's – but it's okay, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
I would go with it, but I don't – Well, it's too late now.
And then another guy will see that's happening, and he'll chime in. He'll kind of come in. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. But, like, real – stoically.
Oh, my gosh.
Should we stop?
Man, we should probably call the guy, and start getting on. This is right in the beginning.
And it would happen.
Can you say, okay, I'm not going to jump?
Can't do anything. Oh, no, we don't do that.
And then in the end, it was always.
You're freaking going.
Fuck it. I'd jump it.
I'd jump it. Yeah. Oh, then they bait you with that. What are you, a pussy? You know, that kind of hole. And you're like, oh, man, no. All right, I'll go.
And the veteran guys, they did this one to me. Well, I didn't pack it. What's his name? Packed it.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
You always pack your own shoe.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
Good one. Good one. I loved it.
Okay, so when you transitioned out of the teams, you went to law enforcement.
Yep.
Well, real quick, was the time frame when you were in the teams, is that when they set up Red Cell?
No. That was a whole different ballgame. The funny thing there was, I loved understanding everything, and so I made sure I understood the history of the teams, and I was very proud that John F. Kennedy and the Chief of Navy Operations in those days were the ones that decided to have a SEAL team. And, you know, regardless of politics, why was I a Kennedy fan? Well, in case people don't remember, John F. Kennedy was a lieutenant in the Navy. And not only that, he served as a patrol boat captain, which were sitting ducks in the water. And PT-109 was cut in half, and he saved his crew after a long time. And I'm telling you, folks, it's hard to explain to people that aren't in the military how much that means to us.
John's the one to set us free.
That's right. And I'll tell you what, I just can't say enough about the man.
Talk about him enough, man.
And I will always carry, you know, a 50-cent piece with me, along with my now a challenge coin. I mean, challenge coins weren't big when I was in.
They are now.
But they are now. But I had JFK's coin, and I always will. So that was important to me. But I'm not really sure I want to say this, because you never talk about dirty laundry unless you're with SEALs. So let me just say this. One of the reasons that I was really driven to be a frogman was because they weren't designed for any other purpose other than warfare. And so I felt that was an opportunity to fight for people that couldn't fight for themselves. And believe it or not, when I was a kid, and this is a true story, I thought, what is the epitome of evil? What would you fight? And in those days, there was a movie that came out called The Exorcist.
That one got me.
And I wonder, is that true? Is that not true? And if it was, there's no greater direct confrontation than a fight with that level of evil. And there happened to be a monastery near our hometown, self-serving. It was really cool. Every now and then you go up there and they had the stereotypical great big monk with an eye patch who was ringing the bell. Ah. But for some reason, my parents...
Is that true?
True. My parents wanted him, and they talked to him. And they said, our boy thinks he can be a priest and be an exorcist. And he sat me down and he said, I'm going to tell you one thing I want you to know more importantly than anything. You study about the good first, and you study about Catholicism and all of that before you ever think about anything learning evil. And as cool as that was, there didn't register with me again because I
went the evil route first. Yeah, I got that. Yeah, went down to the dark side of the force in the beginning. Totally didn't listen.
Boy, didn't I make that mistake a million times. And again, I went off track on why I told you that story, but that was part of why I went in the teams. And what happened was, remember, I'm surrounded by Vietnam veterans, and every now and then somebody told me a story. It was a story about war, and it was a story that talked about struggle that happened to some people in a war. And Vietnam was a very, very difficult war. It was difficult in so many ways, but mostly because... Can you imagine, and this is one of the stories that hit me hard. Can you imagine being a frogman? Now, you know, we choose our military because they're young, so that they can recover physically, but also because they're malleable. We can tell them, you know, that we're doing this for the right reasons. And can you imagine that in Vietnam, you have a man that's been a farmer all his life. That's all he knows. Mm-hmm. He's planting rice and he's making a living for his family, and the country's in turmoil politically, but it doesn't register to him. He lives in the country. He just makes rice. And next thing you know, the communists come to him, or people of another political stance, if you will. And well, you're going to give us that rice. And by the way, you need to hold these guns for us or something like that. He doesn't know any better, because if he doesn't do that, they're going to kill his family. Now the Americans come in and say, hey, don't do that. And we'll protect you. But can we? Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, what does the guy do? He does what he has to do to survive. But that also makes him a target.
All right, let's talk about the game changer that every business needs. The secret weapon that has been right here at the helm of the T&Q online shop, Shopify. Shopify isn't just another platform. It's the turbo boost behind countless thriving businesses worldwide, just ensuring everybody's running like a well-oiled machine. And whether you're just stepping out in the e-commerce arena for the first time, you're expanding to physical stores, or you're hitting that sweet million-dollar mark, Shopify is your steadfast partner through all of it. From selling trendy tees to posters to dominating the service industry, it doesn't really matter what you do. With Shopify's flexibility and seamless POS system, they've got you covered through all of it. But you want to know what really makes Shopify stand out? Okay, so imagine their checkout as the LeBron James of the internet, skyrocketing sales by 36% compared to any other platform. This is easily my favorite feature from them because what they do is they're just so successful at it. You really can't beat it. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, score a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TNQ. When it comes to growth and success, Shopify is your slam dunk. Remember, with Shopify, you're not just a business owner, you're a champion of your industry. Experience the difference at shopify.com/TNQ.
What an impossible situation to be in.
And tactically, if you look at it as a purist, he has to be removed. But if you look at it, I don't know, as a human, I would have found that hard if someone told me I had to kill that guy. And I know some people had to. And that and a few other stories of something that bad that might have happened really affected me. And I thought about, you know, I want to go after bad guys, but that doesn't sound like it's as clear cut as I thought it was. And therein lies the rub. But, you know, when you're in the military, first of all, you're young. You shouldn't be thinking that way. You should be thinking that I will follow all the orders. That's a good soldier.
That's what they say.
I already told you. I was never that person. And maybe somebody should have told me, you know, yeah, you can go in the military, but listen, this is how it goes. So that weighed heavily on me. And fortunately, I was never put in a position to do something that I didn't feel was right, and I didn't have to carry that weight. But it always worried me, what would I do if I was put in that position? And thank God, rumors of SEAL Team started to come up. And this was a team that was going to be created for a role of anti-terrorism, a term that really wasn't that well known at that time. And I found it to be very interesting, and I looked into it more because it was still, it was very, even within the commands and community, it was a hush-hush thing. And that team was started in 1980. I was brand new to the teams, but the first time, it was kind of like a traveling road show. They would have interviews, and if you were interested in SEAL Team, you could go to the interview. Well, here I am. I'm standing in line to go to the interview, and guys around me have personnel jackets like old Yellow Pages. You know, these are all Vietnam vets, and I barely got two pieces of paper in a manila folder, but I'm going anyway. And now it's my turn, and I poke my head in the door, and I see this guy with long hair, full beard, sitting behind a desk. He's got a vest on, a three-piece suit. And I look over here, and there's this guy with long hair, look like Edgar Winter in the other corner. And I'm thinking, oh, excuse me, I must be in the wrong room. And then I hear, fuck you, Karachi. You're in the right room.
That's what you want to hear.
That was my first meeting with the founder and the commander, Richard Marcinko. Ugh. And I come here. And I stepped in front of the desk, and you know what? He knew everything about me in high school. He knew about lacrosse. He knew about all the times I wrestled and that I was a martial artist. Quote, just a fighter, really. And he said to me, he goes, look, why do you want to come here? What do you know about the team first? I told him what I thought I knew. And he said, most of that is accurate. Why do you want to come here? I explained to him just what I told you guys about something that I never thought about before that might be a challenge to me, you know, inside. And he told me what the team was, and he told me what he was going to do. And the other thing that bothered me was I wanted to do what we do. Well, I was a Cold War frog man, and that's pretty tough to be a war machine in Cold War. That doesn't make any sense.
Hardest on our guys. I was talking to some of the young ones earlier in the week, and you can see it in their face.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is hard. You're a war veteran. You went in the teams and did what you're supposed to do. Well, you did a lot more than that, but
that's why I'm adamant about telling them that hunger. I remember that.
We wanted to do that, and there's so many Cold War frogmen that were always ready. We went in ready. There was no war, but we were ready. It just never happened, and it's tough. It's very tough to train, and never do the job. And it was not only that, but Mr. Marcinko said, look, you're going to be everywhere it's going on. We're going to be there as instructors, observers, but you'll be involved. You might even be wearing another country's uniform, but you're going to be involved. And I was like, holy shit, that's the answer to my dreams. I thought I was stuck.
Does anybody get to sit in an interview when the boss actually says something cool like that?
And then he says,
you know what I'm talking about? Like when they're throwing out the brochure, and it's like, that's what I need to hear right there, man.
And the fact that some people may take great offense to this, I was a bit distraught if I was told to kill this farmer. And now here was a man telling me, no, you're going to be in a different place, and it's going to be very purposeful, and I, you know, I don't want to say too much more that was wrong, but then he proceeded to say, but I know where you're going next, and you need to make that trip. And after that, if you want to come back, I'll take you. Now, remember, he's taking the cream of the teams, and these are all war veterans if you can get them. There were quite a few guys that weren't at one point, but still. And what he alluded to was something else that's special about the teams. So at this time, there was a fella in North Africa that was acting a fool. And SEAL Team was putting a platoon together that quite possibly was going to be the first Desert War platoon. I ended up writing a chapter in a book a long time ago I was very proud of called Men Under Pressure. And it was about this whole period. And what's really beautiful and unique about SEAL Team is they are now putting together a platoon that might possibly see the first war since Vietnam. So the officer in charge has to be very experienced. Officer in charge these days, former enlisted man, now Lieutenant R.J. Thomas, arguably one of the finest shooters SEAL Team's ever produced, and quite a record in Vietnam. Mr. Thomas was the kind of guy that you either liked him or you hated him. To say he was opinionated was an understatement, but he earned every bit of it. So there you go. Now, that's your most experienced guy. Chief was experienced but kind of new. And then your first class, who was a wonderful guy, was killed, I understand, in the private sector. But he was a PT machine, and afterwards, I always hated that. I was such a smartass, and I'd always pick on him. But when I heard he passed away, I was so sorry I couldn't tell him how much I respected him, a guy named Dave LeConte. So bottom line is what I'm trying to tell you is that platoon was made up of brand new people and veterans to make sure that we would be okay, but the new guys would learn the way.
We still stack like that.
Mm-hmm. And that, again, is one of the beauties of the teams and the secret, because they know we have to prepare these people. We train the young guys as good as we can, but they still have to mix it up to really know, yeah, can they do it.
And then people ask, do we have platoons that they stack deep? Yeah, we got that too. I mean, if we can mix it up anyway, we do it. And most everyone in the teams, you hear about it, you know about it. If you're not privy to it, you can witness, you can see it when it goes down, and then we have our own way of noticing.
And that's brilliant, and they do it. At any rate, and that deployment took a little extra time, and there was a fella who was big wheel in the Navy, in the Marine Corps, who was part of organizing these things. Really can't say much except his last name was a Major Compass Heading, and he was a proponent of the teams, and we were supposed to do something special in this mission. In the end, they felt it was too risky, I think, and they went a different way with technology, but we're still there, and we did some, we always will do training or something to kind of mask why we're in that part of the country, and the mission went well, and that particular guy, his name is Kadhafi, the airstrike was such that he decided not to screw with us anymore, you know? Most of the time in, for me, was like that. I had one other time I wanted to tell you about that I acted a fool again. We were back in a truck, and it was three frogmen, my chief again, who was, I can't say enough about him. We had some great people in teams like you did, though. And remember, we're putting our life on the line.
I had great chiefs. I got lucky.
Mm-hmm. There you go. How do you motivate a guy to go in the battle to risk his life like that? And a kid, you know. So you've got to have brilliant people and brilliant training.
Yeah.
Like the LPO, he runs it. The chief's in charge, and the officer's responsible. So when that, and let me tell you something about those anchors. Not the senior chiefs hold rank and the master chief, but that one, that seven, that freaking chief. Runs the show. You screw around one of them, and they'll end your life.
He's the glue.
Man, and when you got a good one, God dang, man.
Well, and I'm very fortunate, too. We had some great people there. But it's still, you go back to, imagine, I do this because I always carry a little stone in my pocket. And that stone just looks like any other stone. It's red, a lot of iron in it. Reddish, and there's actually some fades of red. And I never tell anybody where the stone came from until I tell them the story. But imagine our brothers, our forefathers that were the engineers in D-Day that had to swim in the naked warriors and blow obstacles under that fire. Maybe the Germans didn't rain it down on them because they didn't want to give away that they were there, but still they were out there doing this. And then you got to think about the guys that are in the landing craft, and in the first wave, why they were told that, you know, we bombed the crap out of the beach.
They said it was,
no resistance, you're going to be good to go. Right. And then we lost 95% of that first wave. Now you're the second wave. Well, how the hell do you motivate a guy in the second wave that you got to go on the beach?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's Saving Private Ryan opening scene?
Basically.
When I mean, think about just rolling up on there and just dropping the gate down, and they're parked. We didn't touch them, come to find out. And they were waiting on us, and we got there, man. And they put a frig out, dude. That's
like
that story in itself is probably one of the most intense.
So you take that back, and you talk to a frogman, and you know that every one of our missions often are like that. We're outnumbered.
Yeah.
How do you motivate people to go there? And that stone always reminds me, because that stone is from Normandy, and it's not just from the beach on Normandy. It's from our beach, Omaha, which was, as we now know, the worst. Utah had shells. It was almost, I forget, more than a mile away, but I didn't know it at the time, but that stone was indigenous to Omaha. So much so that the first time I was at the cemetery in Normandy, they have a statue of a young man coming out of the water to symbolize the Allies, mostly the Americans, that were young that gave their life for those people. But impregnated in the concrete at the base of the statue are these stones.
See, we do need to go, babe.
The 80th anniversary.
We're talking about going in June.
You have to.
Okay.
You have to. It's for us, it's an absolute. I was there providing private security my first time, and I was just so happy that the gentleman I was working for, who was a wonderful man, wanted to spend time there and allowed me my own time there. It's difficult to talk about.
Sure. Aww. I remember doing, we had to blow the in third phase to reenact that whole evolution, blow all that stuff up underneath water. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I was good at in the team is I'm good in the water. And that was a tough evolution to get down there. So imagine doing that in real life and when they were having to go in there and do all that under fire. And
I dislocated my shoulder the first time doing that. You go down there and you're tying those haversacks on. You use all your air and you pull up to get that air. And next thing you know, you get hit by a wave. Yep.
Bust you right in the face.
Yep. Mm. And that's what happened. I pulled so hard, my arm got contorted, and then I ended up getting knocked out on the beach. I guess the sea states were high that day.
Oh.
But still, how do you, and so we boil that down, and that's for another time, but we have a technique now where we help people understand how to use their mind to overcome what their body
is. Oh, all that's advanced.
Yep.
I was talking to a guy.
That's absolutely right.
One of the doctors, Dr. Eric Potterat, he spent an extensive amount of time in our communities and cultivated all that. All that stuff we were talking about earlier where they put you in the hard stuff and it came out. Like what's actually in there? Well, now they evaluate that and they teach it. So it's completely the guys coming through the program nowadays they're on point. Like we can bag on them and they're a bunch of bitches and I mean they're putting well, I get that.
I appreciate you saying it, but I'm going to tell you that you are an example of that evolution too, and that's something that's very dear to me in the teams because we all care very much. I mean, I only cared about a few things in my life, and the first piece of metal was my trident. And the others were badges that I wore.
I still stare at that thing.
As a police officer. But when you leave the teams, you don't just say, well, yeah, I was a frogman and that was that. You want to know that everything that we've done keeps being carried on because I know that we're trying to always do good. And we do good in a very unique way.
In our purest form, we're always trying to do that.
True. And no one, to this day, I'm sure it still holds true. There is no one is physical and capable. And to do that, you have to have the mind. They're teaching that now, which is what they should do. For me, I had to learn it on my own and then take that into law enforcement and more life death situations. And I've always been, though, the person that assessed. I got through an evolution and I would assess that. How did that work? And why did I? And because the key was for me, and that's a good point. I'll drop it there. But the key was for me, so being on SEAL Team 1, I have the Asian theater of operations. And so it wasn't routinely taught fighting skills in the teams. Some platoons would take more of a point to make it happen, but I went out and studied on my own. Every country we went to, and the reality of it was, I'm not studying with some dojo that has business. These are real people that it was part of their culture because they were oppressed. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had to sweep floors or serve tea until they didn't care if I was a SEAL or not. I'm still a friggin', you know, American gravy sucking pig. So I had to tell them that I'm here and I care. But you know, one of the first things I learned at this time was it wasn't about muscle, it wasn't about brawn, it was about the mind. And so I was taught early on, I had the luxury of learning that it was about the mind. And the uniqueness of that was I was able to apply the value of the mind to more experience at a young frogman instead of most people don't think about the mind till they get old.
That's what happened to me.
And they start losing.
I'm that guy. Like when you talk about the evolution, you evaluate it, I would forget it. Like if we went through it and did it, hit it and forget it, and then later, like now it's catching up with me. I'll replay the scenario in my head, and now I'm doing my reflecting. Mm. And I get a great deal of that when I come across y'all.
Don't you people believe that? But I'll take part of that.
That's the best part about having the team guys, because in the middle of the moment, they'll have one guy who's talking smack, one guy who's upset.
Oh, true.
One guy who's evaluating, one guy trying to get us through it, one guy laughing. One guy didn't even give a damn.
Yep.
We're all there.
That reminded me of the subject where I lost track. Again, we were talking before the show started. It was one of the things that Marcinko did at the team that I always remembered very strongly, and I brought it out in every law enforcement unit that I was part of or that I trained. And he made it clear to the guys because in those days, six, I believe, was on call anywhere in the world, and I forget, it was 11 hours or 14 hours, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And we had that. Three teams, even though there were only two teams. You'd have a team that was on leave, a team that was in training, and a team that was ready to go.
Standby.
Right. And you couldn't, you know, standby team, you don't go out party, you don't drink.
That too. I knew a guy who tried to get around that rule, and they didn't have it.
There you go.
So you're never too good enough to get your ass booted out of there.
But no, that's for sure. And here was a point.
They're real funny about that.
Well, and it should have been that way.
It's just, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And Skipper told you, he said, here's the deal. Two things. I'll probably forget the second one, but the first one was, if you come in on a call and you've been drinking too much, you had a fight with your wife, anything else that made you less than 100%, you have to tell me. I'll make the decision whether you're good to go or not. Yeah. But if you don't tell me.
That's the worst.
And something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Woe is you. You're gone. That was absolutely necessary. And no one should be afraid of handling things like that. And that's why every time in law enforcement I was part of any kind of unit like that, I made it clear to everybody I work with. I gave them those same rules. Mm. You've got to be there 100%. If you're not, be responsible to everyone else and say so. But if you don't and you screw up, you're gone. And I could care less. The other thing that Skipper did was more tactical. Actually, I'm not even going to go into that one. Moving on.
I remember him those rules setting up too. Because then you guys could walk in. Like some of us you can tell. You can just tell if we've been hitting the drinking.
Absolutely.
We just can't help it.
Absolutely.
And then some of them can hide it. Some of them do. Some of our boys can hide that shit, man.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right there, too. Guys can
bring it. I mean, they're the best ones to watch them fess up. You're like, yeah, I'm good. Of course I'm good. I'm the best at it.
Yeah.
Maybe I had a little, you know, the senior chiefs. Freaking senior chiefs, man. Well. They're freaking great at that.
So once you transitioned out of the teams, and what made you decide to go into law enforcement right after that?
Well, let me address one thing on that drinking thing, because it is something that comes up about, you know, it's kind of synonymous with Dick and the team sometimes. And I'm not going to say that the Skipper was perfect or anything like that. I will say a lot, and everybody has their flaws, I believe. I've never met Christ, but I expect, you know, he doesn't, perhaps. But you got to remember, we talked about this. We've skirted this before. When we talk about the teams and what our job was, we're not talking about people that are hanging wallpaper or doing building or something. If you make a mistake, you can recover. We're talking about people that are putting their lives on the line. And more importantly, Marcus has said this many times, very, very properly, my responsibility is to him and his to me. And I better be friggin' on my game. People don't realize. They see war movies and the guys engage. Well, first of all, you got to be able to hit the target. You got to be able to hit the target the other guy isn't shooting at. How do you communicate that? And imagine trying to do that under fire where you can't hear a damn thing and people still trying to communicate. But I can go on and on. But you got to know that these guys are going to do that. America routinely isn't, in those days, peacetime. We're not involved. They don't let us be involved. And that's one of the things that Dick was going to do that I felt was unique, being on site with other countries. Go ahead and call us, you know, lane graders, whatever, but at least we get the experience. We're bloody nose fighters. United States gets beat up, and then you send the guys to war. They have no experience. So we're going to get our ass handed to us in the beginning because we've got people there that don't have any experience. And one of the things, that's why Dick tried to create the brotherhood and the bond so that there be more of a responsibility, and that often came in a social experience. The sad part about that is some people, that social experience can become a disease, I guess. So it wasn't just about getting together and getting drunk. That wasn't it at all. I used to love to sit near the Skipper and he's talking to somebody new or anything, and And he'd be talking, and the next thing you know, and of course, he used some colorful language. Everything he did as a trick. He did to see if that person was listening. He did to get that person, because that person weak? If I said something vulgar, did it bother them? And now he knows. And every now and then, he'll stop and say, oh, yeah, and something totally obscure, you know, something weird, you know, hey, that red car went down the street, and then he'd get back to the conversation. Did the guy catch it? Was the guy actually listening to what he was saying? Mm-hmm. He did that throughout, and so that was the thing. He, a lot of people and critique him on that, but these guys could be going to war any minute. Are they going to be able to do it? Will they handle it? Because remember, the other part about it was Mr. Marcinko wasn't a really good politician. And remember, I'm a Cold War frogman. And the other thing is I'm not making any claims to that I was a big six operator or anything else like that. No, I wasn't. I wasn't at six very long at all because Mr. Marcinko was forced to leave while I was there, and I didn't know that was going to happen.
We talked about that earlier. We got frogs that are great. They can communicate and talk to you, and then we got guys that we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's not the guy you put up there for that. You put this guy there for that.
Unfortunately.
It doesn't make him a bad guy. It just makes him, and everyone has a friend like that. Everybody knows somebody like that.
I don't know why that is, but that's absolutely true. And I blame myself. I think, you know, when something happens over and over again, finally you got to look in the mirror and say, I think it's me. Is it him? No, it's me. And that was my feeling. But yeah, there could have been greater communication because, I don't know, sometimes they just feel like you're supposed to know. I'm not sure. But for me, that was the point there. Skipper was gone, and I'm looking at that and thinking, shit, that wasn't supposed to happen. And the guy coming in to replace him was a respectable frogman and a Vietnam veteran, but he was going to change the team and run it differently. I won't go into that more because I've had some run-ins with this, and some people held that against me that I left the team. But I might have been one of the youngest to go there, but I was the first one to leave under my own guys like that. But what we were talking about was instead of sitting me down and saying, why are you leaving? Let's discuss this. CEO ended up threatening me, literally threatening me, saying, I'm going to take your NEC away. And for folks that don't know, in those days, it's called the Naval Enlisted Code. And frogmen today have a rating of frogmen. In those days, we didn't have a rating of frogmen. You were a sailor. So in my case, I was a gunner's mate. I went to gunner's mate school. And we only do that because, well, if I break my arm in buds and I can't become a frogman, I don't want to be peeling potatoes on a battleship. But that meant that, well, if you wanted to come back in the Navy, and that happened to a lot of guys. A lot of guys leave, and they don't like the civilian world, and they come right back. But I looked at that, and I thought, wait a minute. I'm a 4-0 sailor. I've got a good reputation. I've got a good reputation as an operator. Why would you do that? And you can't do that. And I ended up getting a lawyer, and next thing you know, that was changed. But up until that process, I'm a young man. Somebody could have said, hey, Chris, and sit down and said, why are you doing this? And this is the way the world is. And maybe I would have learned it sooner than when I did learn. And what I ended up having to learn, and for all the young people that may be thinking about that, or for the parents looking for a way to discuss it with them, look, the reality of life is, from me, you can't change the world. You have to learn how to navigate accordingly. You can change and affect people around you. And that's what you should be thinking more about. Had I understood that sooner, why, I'd have a couple retirements by this point instead of turning in three different police badges and my Trident along the way because it wasn't perfect in the way I thought it was going to be. So, and that's where I think we were talking about not only that, but...
I mean, look at all this stuff that you've gotten into. I hear you say that. I've heard a few guys say that. Like they kept moving and moving, chasing something. But then you got to look back at what you've accomplished and what you've been through. That in itself is amazing.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but I don't ever. I've always wondered. It's always been the big question for me. I know I was made to do that, but they didn't give me my war. I kept missing it. just like that. I left 30 days before Grenada. And that's disrespectful for me to say, because guys lost their life there. But I didn't know and they didn't know, because I called right away.
Oh.
And they told me, and the one guy told me that if we knew, we would have told you. God bless them. They gave their lives there, and we lost some great guys there, but no but, period. For me, though, I thought I excelled in that, and I thought I'd get that opportunity. And then I went into law enforcement, and, I excelled there. Law enforcement to me was like a laboratory. Kind of goes back to what you're saying. So what happened? Well, once I realized that Mr. Marcinko was leaving and the team was going to change, and they had forgotten to sign me up the way I was supposed to, because if you make it to special team, why, you're going to re-up no matter what. It kind of goes without saying. And the admin guys were friends of mine, and I told them, sit on it as long as you can, because I'm not sure. But in the end, I decided no. And getting past that, the point was, well, I wanted to do that job. So now it's kind of saying, and this is really sounds horrible, and maybe is the definition of a young man, but where is there a war I can get in? Where can I stand up for somebody and fight, but for a reason? For a purpose.
Yeah.
I've learned later that we all may search for a purpose, but it's not that complicated. Just be purposeful. And for me, the only place that I could basically have a walk on war was in law enforcement. And Mr. Marcinko he was moved from the team by that time. And I went through all my thing, and then finally the head of Spec War 2, after the lawyer contacted him, told the new CO 6, you can't hurt this kid. You didn't sign him up. He's leaving. That's that. And, you know, that was at the end. The green team, they had the new expansion team. We had two blue and gold, and most of my friends from one were on blue, and they were putting me on red, and I was a kid again. Somebody just would have told me, hey, it's not a big deal, you know. But anyway, so leaving. And Mr. Marcinko actually called me and before the team left and said, okay, I heard the news. What are you going to do? And I told him, he said, well, good. You're going to go to school. I want you to try something else. I'm not going to go into what that something else was. But after that period of the something else, I ended up going to school. I had an opportunity. I ended up in New Jersey. So I thought, well, I'll go to Rutgers. And Rutgers had a lacrosse team. And I could be a cop, go to school.
How old are you now?
And play lacrosse.
How old are you at this time?
I'm 67.
Yeah. No, then.
Oh, then. No. I went in at...
Right out of teams, right?
Yeah.
So, 20s?
I went at 18, so early 20s. Yeah. Yeah. And there you go. I started law enforcement, and the first thing that happened was the people... I started at Rutgers. Very proud of that. And... Rutgers is a unique place. I met some good people there. I went through a police academy. I told you about that. I've gone through so many police academies and SWAT schools in my life now. I thought if I ever wrote a book, I'd call it Boot Camp. Because I just kept doing it and doing it.
There's got to be one guy that's done all of those, right?
Well, and you know,
track for that?
How many guys, though, would be willing to start over new?
Yeah.
You got a lot of guys that are frogging.
Well, our guys don't like to do that.
Well, I know a lot of guys that they go to a police department and say, hey, I'm a fucking SEAL. Hand me a badge.
Yeah, right.
You know? But it wasn't like that.
It's tough. I'm doing that right now. It's just, you know, it's just.
Well, you know, you're doing it right, though. Yeah, you know, we talked about that, too. And I'm sorry, I'm going to be all over the place. But if I'm not, I'll never remember. But Marcus and I were talking about something earlier, and I'm going to bring it up here again. And remember, I found life kind of boring. That's why I jumped on an airplane really didn't do anything for me. I followed the rules. It was an easy day. I mean, that was my career in law in the SEAL team, whatever it was. It was like, whatever. Just teach me how to do it, and I wasn't thinking about it. But whether that's true or not for other people, the one thing about life that I know that is real and is more important than anything else is life may be boring to me or someone like me, but what makes life is being able to share it with someone special. If you don't have that, then it's different. And so for anybody that knows, that hears me, having that makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. And some of us get it sooner or later. I don't know, but that's one of the bad things about the teams we're talking about. First of all, it should be somebody that's willing to talk to people. Know that these are young men that are making decisions maybe that aren't the best decisions. They have to learn somewhere, but they don't do that. Why isn't there someone that talks to them about marriage, about that commitment, understanding if this is going to, you're going to be away from home half the time of this relationship, maybe it's something you should put off. I'm sure somebody's going to say there's some liability to that, but you know, too many guys end up retiring, then all of a sudden they find themselves home. Well, Mrs. has been running the house all these years, and now you want to get involved?
Oh, I know a bunch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, dude.
I got a bunch of guys like that.
Yeah.
So
that goes through our lineage. That particular predicament.
Agreed. And so that's a tough thing. But back to the law enforcement.
Which we got to give props to the wives that make it.
Oh man,
it's like going through buds for them when we're in. I didn't have to do that, but. I know a bunch of them that did.
That's why anybody that I ever met.
You can't mess with them. Seal wives, they'll play.
Right. You have to give them tremendous credit and respect. And it's easy if you're looking from the outside in, but, you know, a lady that's married to a frogman is essentially a frogman.